Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Classmates, class of 2019, you look beautiful.
The best video you'll see on the internet this week is definitely the last 5 minutes of this year's commencement address at Morehouse College.
On behalf of the 8 generations of my family who have been in this country, we're going to put a little fuel in your bus.
As you probably heard, billionaire investor Robert Smith ended his half-hour speech by telling the graduating class he was going to pick up the tab on their college tuition.
And my family is making a grant to eliminate their student loans.
This announcement was so unexpected. It took a couple of seconds for the crowd to respond. When they did, they started chanting MVP. I mean, I watched it and I thought, this is super delightful, especially because he gives this announcement and it really does seem like no one was expecting it. Like there's a guy behind him.
The face.
The face.
It's so, I'm surprised I haven't seen more memes of it.
Jordan Weissman writes for Slate. He's covered higher education for years.
You need to go and look at the speech just because the guy behind Smith, as he realizes what's happening, his smile just perks up and there's just this look of, I mean, it's not even Christmas Day. It's, I don't know.
This man's face, it just opens up. He raises his chin, widens his eyes in shock, and then he starts slow clapping.
It's so pure and so much happiness. And there's so few good and pure things in this world right now that this guy's face really is maybe the best thing you'll see this week. Certainly better than the Game of Thrones finale that we all just sat through.
But a couple seconds later, the video takes a turn, for me at least.
This is my class, 2019.
It happens when Robert Smith makes clear he's relieving the debt of this class, but only this class.
And I want my class to look at these alumnus, these beautiful Morehouse brothers, and let's make sure every class has the same opportunity going forward.
When I was watching, I couldn't help but think how many more kindly billionaires there'd have to be to actually solve the college debt crisis for everyone. I mean, if I was a member of the class of 2020,
yeah,
I guess I'd be a little pissed.
Possibly, yeah, right? Why not me? What do I get?
What'd I do?
Where's my billionaire? Where's the hell?
I talked to Jordan because I wanted to know what might happen next for these Morehouse grads. But I also wanted to talk about what college debt relief might look like for everyone else. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
How much debt does the average Morehouse student carry?
It's about $26,000 upon graduation.
So not insignificant.
No, it's not insignificant. You know, what's interesting about student debt is that, well, interesting might be the wrong word here. You know, it's
what's great about student
what's
debt?
Awesome about student debt. What's worrisome about student debt, I guess I should say, is that we're still trying to figure out how it shapes people's life decisions and how it may actually curb their ability to get a house or dissuade them from going to grad school or constrain their career decisions.
Why is that? Is that just because it ballooned so quickly?
Why don't we know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think to some extent because the problem has become much more severe, you know, in recent years. You've had the combination of more people going to college and more people borrowing because of higher tuition costs, more people borrowing for grad school in particular. It's sort of snowballed. It also, it wasn't as much a issue on people's radars until Occupy Wall Street.
Because so many of the people there were saddled with student debt.
Obviously, there hadn't been as many borrowers at that point, right? Like, millennials were still kind of coming through college. But that was really the moment where activists seized on it. And in a lot of ways, that was when you also started hearing a lot more mainstream politicians talk about this as a crisis. Just to think about it, in 2005, Congress passed a bankruptcy bill that made student loans non-dischargeable. Right. Hmm. Or private student loans, non-dischargeable.
So you're going to have that for life.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't get rid of that debt. That was the attitude about student debt in 2005. A few years later, all of a sudden, you have this sense of, oh, this is actually a generational issue. This is something that's impacting millions and millions of people. And we don't really know how it changes people's lives. Because theoretically, back in the day, economists would say, well, you're investing in your future, right? Like, you are taking out debt. Now you're paying for school and it's going to pay off later with a higher salary or your dream job or whatever.
But many other investments, you can declare bankruptcy and that debt goes away.
Yeah, or there's an asset attached to them, like a house. You can sell the house. We're only just beginning to understand, like, well, is this actually a good investment for people? For most people, it probably is. But is there a minority who it really, really hurts or it really, hampers their life decision making? Possibly. And is it? What happens if you get rid of that debt? What do people thrive? Do more people thrive if they can leave school and not have to worry about paying off their loans?
And what's interesting is right after Morehouse made this announcement that this commencement speaker would be giving away thousands and thousands of dollars to students, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted, she said, "This is a natural experiment. It'll be interesting to see the different choices these students make and we should study it."
Yeah, she was one of, I tweeted something similar. Justin Wolfer is a famous economist, like tweeted out the name of the paper.
Paper?
Or like his imaginary paper that he would title it as.
So what do we already know?
Well, so, it's actually interesting. There was a paper that just came out like last week, I think. I've got it sitting right here because I'm writing about it. They tried to answer, what happens when people randomly have their student debt forgiven? A while back, a bunch of people basically got their private student loans forgiven in court because the company that had bought them couldn't prove it actually had the chain of title. It couldn't prove that they owned the debt. And so the courts just said, sorry, and wiped it away.
And it sounds like winning the lottery.
Yeah, basically, right? Like these people, it was nothing they had done. Like there was nothing special about them except that this giant corporation had fucked up trying to keep track of loans. And they had bought the debts from like other banks and it was just a paperwork disaster. And these economists did this very clever paper where they looked at what exactly happened to this group after. What did this do for them? And they found, well, obviously, it made it easier for them to pay down their other debts. when you don't have to worry about
student
loans.
When you have money, you spend it on other things.
You can get yourself into better financial shape. And these were people who were in trouble. They had defaulted. But beyond that, what they found is this group of former borrowers suddenly became more likely to move and change jobs. And as a result, it seems like their salaries went up because they didn't have this burden.
It was something like an extra $4,000 a year.
Yeah. And that's an average. And it depends on, they call it a heterogeneous effect. But so, it's not the same for everyone. But average out to about $4,000 a year. It's not nothing. And so in that circumstance, we see, okay, well, it helped. This new group of Morehouse students, it's like, well, this is pretty random. Not everyone got a billionaire. And it'll be fun. It'll be interesting to see how their futures compare with the class before and the class after them. It's not a perfectly random experiment because obviously the labor market's a bit different than this year than it will be next year or last year. But it's random enough. It's a good enough experiment. It could tell us something about what happens when people get to graduate debt-free.
I look back at some of your old writing.
Yeah.
You've advocated for making college almost tuition-free for a long time.
Yeah.
And you've said that actually the data supports it.
I have this like funny track record. So back in 2013, I wrote about how the federal government could make public colleges tuition free without spending anything more than they currently did. on higher education because we have this bizarre network of subsidies.
Yeah, just to explain that, what you're basically saying is we spend so much money.
Yeah, no, we have all these tax credits and grants that nobody knows about, and a lot of it gets diverted to the private sector and for-profit colleges. And I mean, I think the thing to realize about the way we finance higher education now is that nobody designed this. Nobody said, oh, yeah, this is the system we want. We've worked it out. This is how we're going to do it. It is sort of slowly accreted over the years where it's like, OK, well, you have student loans and we're going to increase the limits and we're going to, you know, have subsidized loans and we're going to have non-subsidized loans and then we're going to have grad school loans. And then they say, OK, well, we got Pell Grants and we're going to expand Pell Grants. Bill Clinton's like, oh, I need a middle class tax cut of some kind. OK, the American Opportunity Tax Credit, we're going to do that for college. So refundable tax cuts also, yada, yada, yada. And you can see it just sort of we slept walked into it. And it's weird. People think of free college as like one of the like most wacko utopian lefty ideas right now. It's actually one of the least expensive. Like, you know, it's probably no more than $100 billion a year.
The idea is that we're spending the money. It's just the way we're spending the money isn't necessarily great.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly. We don't spend it effectively. Our higher ed finance system is, what's the technical word for this? A flaming car wreck, I think is like what most people would describe it, like even on the left or right. But yeah, so a while back, I sort of wrote this thing saying like, listen, this is a more rational, we could spend this money more rationally and make college basically free. And I actually wasn't totally sold on that idea even myself at the time. I was a little bit more of a mushy technocrat who liked the idea of like means testing everything. It was the Obama era. That was what was in. I was young, impressionable. I took my cues from the president. And over time, I've come around more to the idea of free college as sort of a broader kind of social democratic bargain.
I mean, like you wrote this article sort of arguing we can invest more in the public system. It means sort of giving more money to a University of California, University of Maryland, University of Michigan versus giving a grant so someone can go to Yale or University of Phoenix, which, you know, Yale may not need the money. University of Phoenix, the degree might not be as valuable.
Yeah.
So we invest in the public system and it creates a more robust system for everyone.
Yeah. And there's also this idea that you kind of create a public option for higher ed, right? Like
healthcare.
If the cost of public colleges, if state colleges are much less expensive, that will push down the cost of or at least create price pressure on private colleges as well.
To compete.
Yeah, exactly. Because if like you can go to University of Michigan for a lot less, all of a sudden Notre Dame looks like paying tens of thousands of dollars more for Notre Dame is less appealing. That's one thing. But, free college is, I was glad to see Elizabeth Warren and also, you know, obviously Bernie Sanders put it back on the agenda. Warren's packaged it with student debt forgiveness and this sort of this plan that would forgive up to $50,000 of debt for everybody. And the reason she caps it is because a fairly large percentage of student loans belong to grad students who went to law school or medical school and took out a lot of debt, like, you know, six figures of debt.
But they're going to make a lot of money.
They're probably going to make a lot of money. And we don't want to forgive the debts of people who went to, like, put a Columbia MBA on their tab. And so she has this plan, says, okay, we're going to forgive up to $50,000. And the way she's packaged it with free college, it's like it's a big reset for higher ed. The idea is we kind of messed up. We created this awful system that made no sense. It didn't help anyone. And we're just going to wipe the slate clean, tear the page, whatever, throw it in the shredder and just redo it. And I think it's an interesting bargain. I don't know if it's ever going to appeal to people who just sort of intuitively hate the idea of forgiveness. And there are definitely some people, the ones who are like, hey, where's my billionaire right now? And the equivalent is sort of like, well, I paid my loans. Why shouldn't they pay theirs? But I think it's sort of saying, are bad. We need to redo this whole thing. You know, the last 20 years haven't been great. We need to redo the whole thing and make all the people who's kind of suffered. Then I think that's, at least to me, that seems like the most politically saleable way to do it.
And we should lay out exactly what Elizabeth Warren's plan is, because it is one of the more articulated plans on the 2020 campaign trail.
Yeah.
Where my understanding, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, is that it makes public four-year colleges, community colleges, trade schools tuition free.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also gives this grant, especially to historically Black colleges, HBCUs, to sort of offer the ability for them to join this public system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it also has loan forgiveness for people who've gone to private colleges.
Yeah, it's
really comprehensive.
Yeah. So, well, the historically black colleges thing is interesting because that's actually, it's a tripping point for a lot of people on the free colleges bit, right? Because a lot of them are private, and basically a lot of historically black institutions would be screwed. Is sort of that's the long and the short of it. And then, yeah, she has this on top of a free college plan. She went where none of the other presidential contenders have yet and proposed student debt forgiveness, which, again, is something that has been talked about on the left since Occupy.
I mean, Republicans argue that if we inject all this money into the college system, it would just encourage colleges to raise their tuition more.
Yeah, no, that's a, no. This is the thing about, well, I was talking about how our current higher ed financing system is a complete flaming car wreck. This is the part that people miss. Okay, so let me get into this. This was actually the part.
You're like, let me get on my knife and fork.
So when I started writing about the idea of free college, this was actually what motivated it, which is that our current system where we basically have a voucher system for higher ed right now. Like, you know, like the idea of school vouchers, we give you money and you go pay for a private school. That's what a huge part of our federal higher education subsidy system is. We give people Pell Grants. And we say, go wherever you want. Go to a for-profit school, nonprofit school, public school, whatever. We give you a loan and say, go wherever you want. We'll give you up to $57,000 for undergrad and as much as you want for grad school. And one of the effects of this has very obviously been to push up the cost of higher education, push up tuition. Almost everyone at this point pretty much acknowledges that some colleges have raised their tuition because they see all of this money floating around in the form of vouchers.
So you're saying we're already doing this.
We're already doing this. So the idea is now if you do free college, it's actually sort of a bargain where you say, okay, we're going to pour money into the public system. We're going to fund it so that students don't have to pay tuition, and probably also so that you can like improve your services. So community colleges have more to spend on professors and educators and staff and administrators who can help kids graduate. At the same time, we're also going to make requirements for what you charge in tuition. We're going to regulate your prices.
So you can control it more.
Yeah, exactly. The entire point is that you're controlling prices. Now, that's one of the reasons why just doing student debt forgiveness en masse is probably not a great idea, because actually, that does create what's kind of, we call it moral hazard. At that point, schools might say, oh, they're probably going to get their debts forgiven anyway at some point. So what do we care what we charge? It's going to be fine. And then again, it also raises the question of like, what about the people who come in the future who don't, you know, have their debts? Like, what happens to them? Why does the people who already borrowed get forgiveness? But, you know, what about the people who are going to school now? That's why you kind of have to combine it with actual reforms to the system that's in place for college.
What do you, if you had your druthers,
yeah,
what do you wish Robert Smith had said at this graduation?
I kind of wish he'd say, I'm doing all of you a favor, or I'm trying to make some positive change in this community, but it shouldn't be up to me. You know, as much as I loved seeing that guy's face in the Morehouse video, is smiling, beaming as he realizes what just happened.
Beatific. He's like pure joy.
Yeah, just like he shouldn't have had to be worrying about it in the first place.
Yeah. And let's do something bigger.
Yeah, let's make sure that no one else has to smile that way over that thing. let's make sure there's no more smiles. No more smiles.
Let's not, though. But Jordan Weissman, thank you so much.
Have fun being here.
It is so fun to have you here every time.
Thank you.
Jordan Weissman is a writer here at Slate. He covers economics and higher education. And that's the show. If after listening to this, you are going to Google around for more information about Robert Smith, just make sure you're Googling the right Robert Smith. You're looking for the one who's a billionaire, not the one from The Cure.
No, that would be amazing.
That would be amazing if Robert Smith of The Cure showed up at Morehouse and was like, debt-free everyone.
Oh, also, man.
Free makeup tutorials. What Next is hosted by me, Mary Harris, produced by Mary Wilson, Jason DeLeon, and Ethan Brooks. We'll be back tomorrow. Talk to you then.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.